It's a trap!
Hello and welcome to episode number 89 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray.
So Fantasy Flight just released an updated FAQ for X-Wing, and in this FAQ we actually saw a substantial number of changes to card effects and card text that we've come to be very familiar with in X-Wing over the last several years.
Yeah, a lot of big updates to some of the meta staples, and we also just came off a weekend tournament where we had all the new rules in effect. So we also got some firsthand experience of how these updates are going to change the metagame.
Yeah, so we're going to highlight some of the substantial changes that we saw in this FAQ along with our thoughts on those changes. And then we're going to talk a little bit about the tournament we observed over the weekend. So let's get to it. All right, so last week we saw the release of FAQ version 4.4.0. And within this FAQ, we saw a lot of changes, mostly focusing in on changes to Rebel cards and Scum and Villainy cards. Not a lot to say for the Empire in this FAQ update.
Yeah, they really dodged the update, which is great for them. Most of these updates were not improving ship's output, really reining in a lot of abilities that kind of got out of control over the past year.
Well, let's start by looking at an ability that's been altered, having existed since the start of the game, coming all the way back in the core set. We saw a pretty significant change to Biggs Darklighter's pilot ability.
Yeah, Biggs Darklighter's pilot ability now reads, once per game at the start of the combat phase, you may choose that until the end of the round, other friendly ships at range 1 cannot be targeted by attacks if the other attacker could target you instead.
So this has some pretty wide-sweeping implications. The back half of this text is identical to what Biggs Darklighter has always read. It's just we're adding a limitation here that this ability can only be triggered once per game. Then it also provides the timing window for when you would opt to choose Biggs' ability. But this has some pretty big implications for the Rebellion. A lot of recent lists in the metagame have really depended on Biggs to tie their squads together. Biggs backing up some other weaker chassis just by forcing opponents to target Biggs instead of targeting the other ships in that Rebel squad.
Yeah, before you were able to slot in one or two really powerful Rebel support ships into a squad, usually these are a pretty high priority target for your opponent, because after your support ship goes, a lot of the synergy in your list will fall apart. But with Biggs, you were able to previously protect that investment very efficiently and keep your squad functioning at full capacity for quite a bit longer. Now you won't be able to do this. That once per game means, yeah, Biggs will draw some of the fire, but your opponent will probably be able to play around that and be able to whittle down the pieces they want to remove.
Now, I think this change was actually very positive for the game of X-Wing, and I think it's been a long time coming. Recently, we saw the release of the Ozatuk gunship with the pilot Lorik, who could use reinforced tokens to add even more defensibility to Biggs, which created a pretty oppressive synergy, I think, where Biggs was even more defensible than he was before, and that made lists that included both Biggs and Lorik very hard to compete with.
Yeah, the synergy of Lorik's and Biggs together was really quite powerful. Now I think Rebel players will just opt to take Lorik instead of Biggs, who can still provide your other Rebel ships with a nice defensive bonus, but just a little bit easier to play around for your opponent, not quite as hindering. And you won't get the overlap of Biggs plus Lorik being just too much to chew through.
And I think, if anything, Biggs getting this nerf to his pilot ability kind of emphasizes the value of Lorik. I think the T-65 X-Wing that Biggs was on has been a weaker chassis in the game of X-Wing, but actually the Ozatuk gunship is a pretty strong chassis. A lot of hit points, a lot of durability. 3 attack dice with that wide firing arc is also very nice. So I think, yeah, Biggs going away means that I think people will start to see even more value in Lorik now to back up their Rebel synergies. On a more general note, it seems like Rebel players will have to be a little more creative and innovative with their Rebel synergy lists. Before, Biggs' ability was so universally positive for your squad that you could protect pretty much any ship you included. Whereas now, since you're not going to be able to force your opponent to target one ship round after round, it's going to make it easier for your opponent to try and target and dismantle whatever synergies you bring with your Rebel squad.
Right. Biggs Darklighter was previously just such an auto-include for so many Rebel lists And that's really not great for the game, because that means a lot of your Rebel matchups are going to play very similarly if you're just always facing a Biggs, because every Rebel player is including a minions list. Now I think you'll see a lot more variety of Rebel lists, which I think should be a pretty good benefit.
So I think the other real question here is there still a place for Biggs competitively? Do you think that there's still going to be squads that can use this updated Biggs ability effectively?
Right now I don't see it, but who knows? I mean, that's still a decent ability. It's just right now that T65 chassis is not where you want to be. Biggs' previous ability outweighed the T65 chassis, but without any big changes to the X-Wing ship itself, I don't see Biggs being used. But maybe we'll see some other T65s being used that Biggs overshadowed.
The other change we saw in the FAQ that primarily affects the Rebel faction was a change to Advanced Slam. We kind of got a preview of this change coming in the form of the last preview article for the Alpha Class Starwing, where we saw this updated card text. But now it's officially come in the FAQ, so we know that this is applicable to Advanced Slam starting today.
Right, so Advanced Slam now reads, after performing a slam action, if you did not overlap an obstacle or another ship, you may perform a free action on your action bar. So that means you can't use things like Connor Nets or Cluster Mines after you slam, because those actions are not listed on your action bar. So the crazy, unavoidable bomb dropping from slamming K-Wings is no longer as powerful. But K-Wing slamming bomb dropping fans do have another option.
Yes, you can still use the experimental interface modification, which allows you to, after you perform an action, you can take a stress token to perform an action on an upgrade card with the action header. So that includes bombs like Connor Net or Proximity Mine. So you can get very much a similar effect to what you could get with Advanced Slam in these bombs, but it comes at a steeper cost.
Right, now you lose that versatility of actions, where sometimes you just wanted to slam to avoid a shot and take up a focus or target lock token. Now you can't have that plus the option to slam and drop bombs. You have to pick one or the other. Experimental interface also, of course, is going to give you that stress token, which means your mobility that following turn is going to be reduced, which I think is a fine price to pay if you want to drop bombs from kind of out of nowhere. And of course, I don't think that advanced slam change is going to affect the new Alpha Class Starwing, aka gunship, because it's not dropping bombs and it's got the reload action already on its action bar. So advanced slam is going to work fine there. Yeah, so advanced slam is pretty minor, but the Biggs update is going to be pretty major for the Rebel faction.
Looking over at the Scum and Villainy faction, we saw several pretty significant changes here. I think the first and probably largest change is a overall alteration to the upgrade bar on the Jumpmaster 5000 platform.
Right, and so we've never seen an FAQ update quite as drastic as this. All of the Jumpmaster 5000 ships, Contracted Scout, Manaru, Teltravura, and Dengar, are going to lose both of their torpedo slots and that salvaged astromech slot.
Yeah, and this is a pretty substantial change for a number of reasons. The Jumpmaster platform has been a really strong force in the X-Wing metagame since its release in Wave 8, and a lot of that has to do with its ability to effectively use ordnance, particularly torpedoes and extra munitions. We've already seen several changes that tried to tone down the effect of the ship on the game. Changes to the R4 Agromech, as well as changes to Manaru, the named pilot's pilot ability. But this change just takes it to a whole new level, where we're stripping away completely its ability to use torpedoes.
Right, those torpedo contracted scouts have just been a menace of the metagame since the release in Wave 8. And then we've seen them continue to dominate with Dengar and Teltravura winning the past worlds, and now we have Dengar plus Nim really dominating the current metagame. So now they lose a lot of their damage output. Those torpedo slots made the two attack dice on any of those Jumpmasters turn into 2-4 dice attacks, which were really pretty powerful on a pretty efficient point platform.
Yeah, and I think more than anything, what the immediate effect of this will be is that we won't be seeing a lot of lists with 3 or even maybe 2 Jumpmasters in them, just because the damage output of these ships is so much lower without that ordnance. And since only one of them can take the Punishing One title to get that extra attack die, I think it's still likely we'll see a fair number of Dengars, because it's still a very strong pilot ability, and large base 3 attack dice turrets are still a very strong option in this game. I just think we'll see fewer and fewer of these in lists.
Yeah, I mean, and we've seen Jumpmasters do fine without taking any of the torpedoes, sometimes without taking the salvage astromech. So there's still going to be options for these ships out there. But for those of you who are fans of the torpedo scouts or super loaded up Dengar, those days are over. But if you liked the controlling contracted scout, trying to anticipate your opponent's maneuver, or even just reveal it with intelligence agent, block them, use things like feedback array, ion projector, and intimidation to really disrupt your opponent's ships, the contracted scout is still going to be excellent at filling that role for a scum list. They're still just an efficient stat line. You know, a two-dice primary weapon turret is actually pretty decent when it only costs you 25 points, has 9 hit points and 2 agility.
Well, and they still have a fantastic dial, having that white S-loop and just a really great overall dial with the one hard turns.
Right, plus backing that up with the barrel roll action, still very powerful.
I think they'll definitely still have a place in the game going forward, and I think Dengar's pilot ability is still probably the most powerful pilot ability in the game, being able to attack multiple times in a turn. So I think we'll still see a lot of these, but I think this change is overall a good thing to make for a healthier X-Wing metagame, less dominated by singular builds.
Right, and if you're looking for, you know, other scum munition carriers, we have the Skurg bomber, and of course also the YV-666 if you want the large base munition strike. So scum do still have options, it just won't be that the Jumpmaster 5000 is the best option for any role you want now. It's going to have a little bit more narrow focus.
The other major scum and villainy card that we saw substantial change to was the Atani Mind Link Elite Pilot Talent card.
Can we just take a moment of silence for Atani Mind Link?
Yeah, it's so I've got some mixed feelings about this one. It's such a cool game effect that just kind of went too far. Obviously, Atani Mind Link is now limited to just 2 per list, so you're no longer going to be able to fly those Fen Rao, Contracted Scout, Lancer Class Pursuit list that you were flying before. But overall, it's probably a pretty healthy change for the game. It does leave some question as to what exactly Scum and Villainy is going to be bringing to the game competitively now that 2 of their kind of main features of the faction have been stripped down.
Yeah, I mean, I'll admit it, that Atani Mind Link on Asajj Ventress with just Atani Mind Link and Lotsarazi for 40 points was a crazy value. To get that same efficiency without Atani Mind Link, you'd probably need about 10 points worth of upgrades. So that's about a 50-point ship that was only really costing me 40 points to use. So that kind of points to perhaps there was a flaw in Atani Mind Link. And of course, the same thing was true on Contracted Scouts. I mean, great ship, give it some extra action efficiency. Wow, things get out of control pretty fast, especially with those torpedoes on there. And so I think with those large base ships, Atani Mind Link was just way too powerful. It didn't matter if they bumped, if another ship was able to give him those tokens. We saw even Inaldra giving Dengar kind of that old Dengaru feel, using the overclocked astromech to make infinite focus tokens again, provided each turn by Atani Mind Link. So on those big base ships, it was just probably way too good of a value. On the smaller base ships, though, I think it was really necessary for them to be viable.
Yeah, a lot of those smaller base ships really depend on the action economy you got from Atani Mind Link. Ships like Fen Rao even don't work as well with cards like Push the Limit compared to TIE Interceptors with Push the Limit. It's just the ships function a lot differently. So having that ability to double stack on focus tokens really added to their survivability and function in Scum and Villainy lists. I'm a little worried about what this bodes for ships like the Star Viper and the Kiraz, which just both got revamped and would have benefited a lot from being able to use the Atani Mind Link. Some of those ships might not be strong enough, even with the new upgrades they got, to stand on their own.
Yeah, I mean, at the Quadrant Tournament this weekend, we got a first look at a lot of the scum changes, and we saw Shadowcasters doing great. We saw Dengar still performing very well. When we saw the scum aces, it was noticeable that their efficiency had severely dropped. Having to choose now between having any modification or a repositioning action is just brutal for those ships. And I just don't think they're able to compete with the other ace options that factions can bring.
Yeah, I think both the Jumpmaster change and the Atani Mind Link change really bring into question what is Scum and Villainy's identity as a faction in X-Wing. those are abilities that we saw either or both of them in lists, and now that those have been taken away, it's unclear on what the future of Scum and Villainy is in competitive X-Wing.
I personally think they went the wrong direction in this change. I've just explained why, but I think that a Tawny Mind Link should have read small base only instead of limited to two per faction. That way you can still have those Scum aces. They just can't support those really powerful large base ships that were really abusing a Tawny Mind Link the most. But you're still able to run maybe like a triple Scum ace build and have some efficiency, because those small base Scum ships really needed it.
So we saw some other changes in Scum and Villainy, not quite as substantial as the Jumpmaster or Tawny change. We got a clarification on Socatra Visago, which was nice, finally learning how his ability interacted with certain upgrade cards. Socatra, of course, allows you to swap out your illicit upgrade slot during a game with another illicit card. We finally saw some clarification of how that interacts with the cloaking device. So what it is, basically, is that Socatra, once you get the cloak token, if you swap out your cloaking device, you can keep the cloak token and still use it, but you no longer have to roll at the end of each round to see if that cloak token breaks and forces your decloak.
Right, so as long as you don't ever decloak intentionally, you can stay cloaked forever. Of course, they also clarified you can't feedback array while doing that, which is fine. You just got to use black market slicer tools and everything is fine.
Yeah, I think one of the weird things was that this is just a clarification that we probably could have used several months ago, since this did kind of come up during Store Championship season.
Yeah, like May, like 5 months ago.
I'm just a little surprised that we didn't see changes like this sooner with a past FAQ. That would have been really helpful during those early release days of these new upgrade cards.
100% agree. Our last upgrade card that was really pretty substantially updated was the Genius Salvaged Astromech.
Yeah, Genius now reads, after you reveal and execute a maneuver, if you did not overlap a ship, you may discard one of your equipped bomb upgrade cards without the action header to drop the corresponding bomb token. Now, previously, the reason this was a change was because this ability was kind of being abused by Scum Captain Nims, where you could move your ship, and even if you overlapped your opponent, you could still Genius drop a bomb, which would then detonate, and since Scum Nim is able to ignore the damage from that bomb, it would definitely hit the opposing ship that you bumped into.
Yeah, so now it's just kind of a little bit more fair, where if Nim's able to drop a bomb, you should still be able to shoot at him.
Yeah, and I think this impacts Scum Nim more than it does Rebel Nim, but neither of them are significantly impacted. Scum Nim being able to overlap and drop the bomb was a little annoying from your opponent's perspective, because it's really hard to play around, because even if you block this ship, it's still going to be able to drop bombs and hit you. Rebel Nim doesn't worry too much about that, being able to hold on and prevent a bomb from detonating. You're still gaining the positional benefit of being able to drop Genius bombs after you move.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's still going to be very difficult for your opponents to play around, just because advanced sensors with barrel roll, and then if you give them engine upgrades, just a lot of mobility that ship can still have and make it really difficult to deny those bombs by blocking the ship.
Yeah, I think advanced sensors on Nim is really the more oppressive ability than Genius was, just because it was so hard to determine where that Nim was going to go, especially if it had veteran instincts and can move at pilot skill 10 and then do such great active repositioning, like doing an advanced sensors booster barrel roll, made it very hard to predict exactly where Nim would end up. So there you have it, the substantial changes that we saw in the most recent FAQ update. Obviously, we didn't cover every change, a lot of little nuanced ones in there as well, but these were the ones we felt like impacted the game the most. Hey, Radio TCX listeners, time for a quick Patreon update. We've got our raffle coming up. We're not quite ready to announce raffle winners just because the Patreon donations are still processing, but we will have the raffle winners for you next week. If anyone is interested in becoming a patron of the show so you can be eligible for the next month's raffle, please go to patreon.com/radiotcx and support us at any level. It really means a lot to us.
All right, now let's get back to the cast.
All right, so to close out today's show, we're going to talk a little bit about the X-Wing tournament we were live streaming this past weekend. The archives for these should still be available on Twitch for the next 2 weeks, I believe, so you can check those out at twitch.tv/radiotcx. But overall, it was a really exciting tournament to be at. We had both Guns for Hire legal for play, as well as this updated FAQ, and we started to see some of the impact of this FAQ in this tournament.
Yeah, so let's go over the top four results from the tournament. Should give us a pretty good snapshot what we have to look forward to with the meta. At first place, winning the event, we had Kyle Lembecker flying a double Shadowcaster list. We had Ketsu Ono with Expertise, Dengar Crew, Glitter Stim, Countermeasures, and the Shadowcaster title, along with Asajj Ventress with Push the Limit, Lots Razi, Scavenger Crane, and Countermeasures.
You might recognize Kyle Lembecker's name. He did make top 16 at the most recent Worlds, and he's a very good X-Wing player. He's been flying this list for a while now. I've encountered him at several local tournaments, and I've seen just how powerful this list can be.
Yeah, I mean, the countermeasures on both those ships makes it really resilient to any sort of munition strike or a lot of the Imperial shenanigans that involve keeping target locks around.
Well, I also like that while these are both the same platform with the Lancer-class pursuit craft, they are very different builds, I feel like. So the Asajj front is a very durable build. Obviously, we've seen the great synergies between Asajj's pilot ability and the Lots Razi crew card. But on the Ketsu end, you have a lot more aggressive offensive abilities with Expertise and the Dengar crew, getting you a lot of persistent modification without depending on any actions.
Right. I think here Kyle correctly identified what each of those pilots do best, and really directed his loadout of each of those ships to support those pilot abilities. Ketsu bringing on the damage with those tractor beam abilities is then just further reinforced with Expertise and Dengar. And of course, Asajj Ventress, who's just a real solid tank of a ship, utilizing that Lots Razi crew, and then has countermeasures with repeatable use by Scavenger Crane. It's really resilient.
Well, and one of the cards that I've discounted for a long time is the Ketsu Onyo pilot. I've always favored Asajj, and I think I didn't really appreciate how strong the Ketsu Onyo pilot ability can be, because I usually looked at it kind of in a vacuum, not paired up with Asajj. It's a pretty difficult ability to pull off a lot of the time. In order to deal out a tractor beam at the start of the combat phase, you have to have your opponent's ship in both your primary and mobile firing arc at range one. What I've learned seeing Kyle fly this is just how oppressive it can be once you actually get that ability to trigger. That, in combination with the Shadowcaster title, often meant that once he'd get one of those ships inside both those firing arcs, he'd deal that first tractor beam to get their agility down and reposition them, then usually hit them with an attack, dealing a second tractor beam, which meant that Asajj could then come in with a very strong attack and push out a lot of damage.
Yeah, really powerful build, and obviously well flown, getting him the win at the end.
Yeah, if you're actually looking for a fun and new interesting build, I'd definitely check out this double Lancer-class pursuit craft build.
Our runner-up was flying a pretty sweet Rebel list. Marshall Blackburn came out all the way from Iowa to show us what that new Rebel synergy build is going to look like. He's got...
Now, I got to stop you right there. Marshall was originally a Minnesota X-Wing player, and then he moved out there. So I still think we get to claim that we were the one who taught him how to play good X-Wing.
Actually, I'm pretty sure Marshall taught me how to play good X-Wing, but
that's fair too.
His list was really sweet. It starts off with Aaron Kraken with adaptability, giving out free actions when Kraken shoots. He's got Garvin Dries with R2-D6, allowing him to take calculation and integrated astromech. Now here, it's pretty crazy because those are two cards that you would not think to put in a competitive build, Garvin and calculation. But the combination is pretty powerful, where if Garvin's able to get multiple focus tokens a turn, on combat he can spend one focus token to convert focus to a normal hit and spend a focus to convert a focus to a critical result with calculation, giving him two triggers with Garvin's ability, where whenever he spends a focus token, a friendly ship at range 1 to 2 can get a focus token. So pretty neat innovation there, giving calculation to Garvin. And then he pairs that up with Thane Kyrell with the Alliance Overhaul and Jyn Erso, a great way to give somebody a lot of focus tokens.
Well, the arc is a great method of getting those focus tokens out. Since you're getting a number of focus tokens based on the ships inside your firing arc, having both a forward and rear firing arc on the arc 170 meant that you often could catch multiple ships in your firing arc and then hand out that many focus tokens to a friendly ship like Garvin Dres.
Yeah, we saw this on the stream work pretty darn well. Finishing off the list, he's also got Tarn Meissen with the R7 Astromech and Integrated Astromech.
Yeah, overall, I think this is a really great Rebel synergy build, and it's cool to see something new that doesn't include Biggs Darklighter. A lot of the key synergies here are his ability to get almost all of his ships both a focus and a target lock when it comes time to shoot. Obviously, if your opponent targets a ship other than Thane, Thane's going to be able to get that free action to acquire whatever token he needs. Lots of tokens being passed out by Garvan Drace and Jyn Erso. And then just having that free target lock you get from Tarn Mizzen whenever Tarn gets targeted, you can get that free target lock. He can either use it with that R7 Astromech to reroll attack dice to limit damage coming in, or just end up spending it to fire back at the target that just fired at him.
Yeah, and what was, I think, really exceptional about this list, we talked about previously where Biggs allowed you to protect your synergy ships, those support ships that are providing your squad those really powerful benefits. And without that, it was going to be a lot harder for you to protect your synergy ships, those support ships. Marshall's got a lot of support ships in here. We've got Garvan Drees, Aaron Kraken, and Thane Kyrell. So he's not really able to protect any of them, but because he has such a concentration of support ships, he's got redundancy in all of his synergies. It doesn't matter as much if his opponent's able to remove one or even two of those ships. He's still able to generate a lot of action efficiency with any of his remaining ships.
And this is one thing that he demonstrated when he was on our stream the first time during that tournament. He lost his Aaron Kraken in the first volley of fire. Aaron never really got to shoot. But in spite of that, he was still able to turn the game around and end up taking that as a victory.
So the weakness of this list, we found out when he faced Kyle Lembecker, was those control elements provided by the Shadowcasters, the tractor beaming, and the stress tokens were able to disrupt some of the synergies. So that's something to keep in mind moving forward if you are looking at this build. Maybe look at some way to be able to clear stress tokens.
Or at least prioritize ships that are dealing out those control effects to take them off the board sooner than later.
But for week one of a brand new meta, this was a really powerful Rebel synergy build that I think a lot of his opponents were just really caught off guard by just how many focus tokens and target locks could really be passed around. Also in the top four, we had Eric Tissot flying Miranda Donnie and Captain Nim. Miranda Donnie had the Twin Laser Turret, Extra Munitions, Sabine Wren, Cluster Mines, Thermal Detonators, and Experimental Interface. So here we see that Experimental Interface replacing Advanced Slam. And we also saw the Rebel Captain Nim with Veteran Instincts, Twin Laser Turret, the Havoc title, Bomblet Generator, R5P8, the Revenge Droid, Advanced Sensors, and Engine Upgrade.
Yeah, Eric really showing off here that a lot of the staples of the metagame that we've come to know over the past couple seasons can still exist in the new metagame with the new FAQ update. Bomb dropping is still a very powerful mechanic in the game, and I don't think that's going to go away anytime soon.
Yeah, we saw a lot of players trying to see if Aces were going to make a pretty powerful comeback. And the players that elected to still play the Mirandas and Nims were able to really punish them. Also making the top four, we had Josh Ackerman flying two Wookiee Liberators with Expertise, the Breach Specialist, and Tactician, along with Eden Vril with the Ray Crew.
Now, I really like this build just by the relatively low number of upgrade cards it has on it, and just the fact that it includes the Eden Vril YT-2400 pilot card.
Yeah, that's one we really haven't seen in maybe a few years now.
Well, and it's one that I always discounted. Eden Vril, of course, is able to roll an additional attack die if his target is stressed. And that's an ability that I always thought was a little too hard to trigger, especially since it only affected primary weapon values, so you weren't going to use your Outrider title with this card. But after seeing it in play where you got both of those Wookiee Liberators with Tactician dealing out stress, I could really see the value there of a relatively inexpensive large base turret that was regularly rolling three attack dice and had access to a stockpile of focus tokens.
Yeah, those Wookiee Liberators with Tactician, one of them is pretty good, but multiple of them is quite powerful where their arcs are able to cover a pretty wide zone. For ships that really can't handle stress tokens, it's really difficult to avoid all of those firing arcs with the 180 degrees range 2 band for Tactician.
And more often than not, you were catching at least one ship, if not two, in that Tactician range 2 band.
Yeah, I mean, Eden Vril was a pretty interesting choice by Josh here, giving that list some extra damage output, getting paid off for going pretty heavily in the stress control path. But I think there's a lot of different ways you can build these Wookiee Liberators. I think that Expertise, Breach Specialist, Tactician is really good. We did see its efficiency go down against Kyle, who was also using stress control.
Stress control, of course, turning off that expertise since you can't get the modification if your ship is stressed. But what I really do like about these Wookiee Liberator builds is that you kind of get the best of both worlds there, where you're able to take that reinforced token to lower incoming damage, yet you're still getting persistent offensive modification from the expertise there, so you don't have to worry about depending on actions for your offensive modification.
Yeah, so with all four of those lists, I thought we had really neat different lists. I mean, we saw some of the old stuff still being very powerful, but a lot of new stuff doing really well.
Still interesting to note here, in spite of the FAQ change, we still didn't see any Imperial builds break the top four at this tournament, but I think that's going to take some time before we start seeing the Empire really come back in force.
Right, I think they still need to figure out how best to deal with the bombs. They're still a threat. They went down like a few notches, but they're still very powerful. I don't think you can commit to having two or three aces in a build. I think builds can really only afford one, just because the threat of bombs is just so devastating for those low hit point ships. But they've got some new munitions options with Harpoon Missile now, and their powerful stuff remain unchanged.
A huge congratulations to Kyle Lembecker for winning this tournament. It was a really actually tough field. A lot of the best Minnesota players were all out at that event. So congratulations to Kyle for winning this and to all of our top four finishers. Honestly, if any of you listeners are looking for a new list to try, any one of these four lists would be a great option here. Just pick a favorite and give it a try. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. I do want to give a big shout out to Matt Stoutenberg and Tim Sturm, who helped us get our stream going live this past weekend. They were instrumental in helping us get the setup going and helpful throughout the day, giving us information from the table. So a huge thank you to those guys. If you like this podcast, go to facebook.com/radiotcx and like our Facebook page.
You can also follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really like the show, please consider going onto iTunes and leaving us a 5-star review along with a comment saying what you like about the podcast and why other people might be interested in listening.
This week, we want to give a special shout out to Q10 Fanatic. He said, minute for minute, we're one of the best X-Wing analysis you'll find.
Thanks, Q10, and a huge thank you to everyone else who's already left us a review on iTunes. It really means a lot to us.
This week, we want to give a real special shout out to all of our Patreon supporters. We did the live stream of the Minnesota Quadrant Championship, and it wouldn't have been possible without the support from our Patreon supporters.
If you'd like to support the show directly, please go on to patreon.com/radiotcx and become a backer of the show today.
Again, everyone, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
It's a trap!